Mormon Matters Podcast is a production of the Open Stories Foundation and is seeking to build financial support separate from Mormon Stories Podcast. All donations to Mormon Matters are fully tax deductible and go directly towards keeping the podcast alive and towards building a community of support for Mormons like you. To support the podcast or to join the community, please become a monthly subscriber today at mormonmatters.org.
Welcome, everyone, to the newest edition of the Mormon Matters Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Weatherspoon, and we are excited today to do a follow-up to our podcast, not last week, but the week before, on young single adults in the church. And when we talked about it before, we had three panelists. None of us were, we had three panelists plus myself, and none of us were young single adults, though we all had experience working with them and hearing from them and things like that. But there was many good notes. The podcast generated a fantastic discussion online. We turn you all to it, and I think everyone enjoyed it. But the consistent message is we'd love to hear the voices of young single adults ourselves. And so, with that in mind, we've grabbed who we think will be two fantastic panelists to sort of share their experiences, to talk about what it is to be single in the church today, what goes on in those singles wards, what messages are being conveyed across the pulpit, who's hearing those messages, and how these young single adults balance their church life and their testimony with that natural intellectual curiosity and spiritual adventurousness that kind of comes along at that period of life. And of course, then there's the what's our big joke, the sex question at the end that we talked with a little bit there, and we're certainly going to try to go into that a little bit more towards the end of this podcast as well. So I'm really grateful to have obviously I love having Joanna on practically every week, but I was really excited to renew a conversation and a friendship with Natasha Helfer Parker, who many of you will know from the Mormon Stories podcast. Natasha lives in Kansas, the Kansas area, and she is a Mormon family therapist who deals with lots of great things. She's done many really excellent podcasts with John DeLynn at Mormon Stories, as well as hosting her own questions, and she's got a great blog. And Natasha, I'm basically stealing everything that you probably would have said about yourself, so why don't I just let you tell us the name of your blog and whatever you'd like to share more about yourself as we get going here.
Okay, well, yeah, you pretty much stole my thunder. So thanks, Dan.
Terrible. I reek.
No, but thank you for the very kind words. I'm a marriage and family therapist practicing in Wichita, Kansas. I run my blog, which is kind of meant to be an advice column. It's called The Mormon Therapist because, you know, I guess that's my narcissistic side coming out. I have four kids, and, you know, I used to be single, too, a while ago, and remember some of those challenges as an LDS single, and glad to be here tonight.
Very cool, very cool. Well, and I'm glad to have you as my partner here to probe the depths of the young single adult experience as conveyed through our next two guests, who are Kayla and Cam. Kayla Woodring, would you introduce yourself to us?
Sure. So I am a 22-year-old uncorrelated Mormon. I think that's the term we're all using in this community now. And I just graduated from Utah State University and moved down to Salt Lake City for a while before I go back to school for some graduate studies. And I wanted to create a community for young single adults like me who didn't really fit in with the true believing black and white Orthodox Mormons, but also didn't feel entirely comfortable with, you know, the atheist agnostic crowd. Even though I love both and both have an important place in my life, I wanted to create a forum for other people like me who sort of feel like they're trapped in no man's land, so that we can hopefully make it less of a no man's land and there will be more of us there and it can be our own kind of community. So I got in touch with John DeLynn, who does the Mormon Stories podcast, obviously, and kind of told him what I was thinking. So we've created a Facebook group for that, and it's just called the Mormon Stories Young Single Adult Support Group. And if anybody who's listening wants to join that, they can just go to Facebook and search it. And then it's a closed group, so you'll have to request to join. And then either I can approve you or John will approve you, and you can come be a part of that. So currently it's just our online group, so it's like a digital forum. But the hope is that, you know, maybe by the end of June, the beginning of July, we'll have some sort of get-together in real life, and we can kind of have an opportunity to meet other people like us. And I think it's not just a great way to find people to date necessarily, but people to who we can just hang out with who are like us, because I think a lot of us probably aren't wanting to be in a place where there's more pressure to get married, because I think the single boards themselves already provide enough of that. So that's not really what I want this to be, though dating can certainly be a big part of it. I want it to just be a forum for people who are sort of in the same stage of life and have the same frame of mind, and so we can all come together. So like I said, it's called the Mormon Stories Young Single Adult Support Group, and you can find it on Facebook.
Great. Now, you mentioned to request membership. How do you, what basically, is there an age group or range that you're looking forward to? I imagine one of the qualifications is you must be single.
Yes.
And Mormon. Yes. And Mormon or not Mormon?
Well, you know, I think Mormon, loosely, we'll define that loosely. So you could be a true believing Mormon if you want to come in there and I don't know, broaden your horizons, I guess. Or, I mean, also people who maybe were born Mormon but, you know, don't really identify with it anymore. Because I think we can all relate to each other to a degree, even if it's not quite the same position. I think we all have similarities and we can all learn from each other. I like the idea of keeping it young. A lot of people, at least on the Mormon Stories podcast group on Facebook, were a little offended by that. Not a lot, just a few. And I don't really want to set a rigid age limit on it, but I think the idea is keep it young simply because I feel like we'll have similar life experiences that way.
That sounds good. And other people certainly that might be in the older edge of the singles could certainly start their own group. I'm sure John would be very, very open to helping facilitate, you know, introductions or whatnot through his network.
Exactly.
Terrific. Terrific. Well, thanks. It's great to get to know you, and we'll certainly get to know you more here as we talk a little bit more about your spiritual journey. But Cam Davis, would you introduce yourself to us?
Yeah, I'm a 24-year-old. I've always liked the term Jack Mormon. I don't know if it fits me, though. But I'm an uncorrelated Mormon as well. I'm just finishing up at Utah State. I'm studying religious studies, philosophy, and political science. I've kind of explored the map. And I attempted to do a smaller version, I guess, of what Kayla has taken part in on Facebook. I tried to form a uncorrelated Mormon studies club on campus, and that's how I got involved with a buddy of mine named Ryan Roos that's also attending the university, and he's in charge of the academic Mormon Studies Club. And so I kind of switched gears and got involved in the religious studies academic department on campus and kind of abandoned that approach. So I'm glad it's gotten up and going under different leadership.
Cool. Now, I know, Kayla, you're single. Ryan, or Cam, are you in a relationship? Did I understand hearing something that you may be not quite as single as some people are?
Yeah. I guess that's true. I've been in a relationship for about 4 months now.
Cool. Well, that's neat. And so I just wanted to throw that out there in case that, you know, feel free to bring any of, you know, that different experience into it as we go. But all right, so basically from what I'm hearing is you're both uncorrelated Mormons, but both, if each of you would like maybe take a few minutes to sort of explain, you know, family background, sort of the way you thought your life would go as you know, teenage years or as you start to think about your future? Did you imagine yourselves in this uncorrelated Mormon position? And maybe if there's a moment or two or an issue or two that sort of struck you, that might be a good way to sort of at least begin to raise some of the issues that are facing probably lots of singles, just more through your own telling of your own autobiographies. So should we go in the same order we've been going and see if Kayla will start?
Sure. I'm happy to do that.
And Natasha, do you have anything you want to make sure that they try to cover in this first little segment?
No, I'm totally with you on this. Let's just get, yeah, I want to hear their stories a little bit.
Great. Go, Kayla.
Okay. All right. Well, I grew up very traditional LDS. I was, you know, the president in my seminary class in high school, and I was kind of what you might call a Molly Mormon. I don't know if that term is derogatory. I never really took it that way. But I definitely was called that. I was very much a true believing Mormon up until the time I was about 19. And kind of what started my uncorrelated Mormon journey was I was sitting in an institute class, and this was during the time of Proposition 8. And I, you know, I have to say, I have a lot of really close gay friends in my life. And in this institute class, the teacher said something about that what makes people gay is that they masturbated too much. And I just remember so unbelievably upset by that it was the first time that I really started to, like, question what the church was telling me and what their reasoning was for the decisions that they were making about Proposition 8 and the way that they were encouraging members to participate in that. So,
where were you when this happened? I'm sorry.
This was in an institute class in Logan.
Okay.
In Logan.
Okay. And I can't remember. Did you say that were you raised in the Wasatch Front? Sort of.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes,
okay.
I was. So I'm a Utah Mormon, very traditional Utah Mormon.
Did anybody challenge that in that class or?
No,
and
I don't
kind
know
of fall silent.
If I was the only person who felt uncomfortable, but I really did. And I didn't go back to that class for a few weeks. And then I went back, and again, you know, the same teacher brought up Proposition 8. And it was in a Book of Mormon class that I felt had, you know, really nothing to do with Proposition 8. But he just seemed to feel the need to hammer on this issue. And so that's something that really started to make me uncomfortable with Proposition 8 altogether. And so I would read up a lot of the things that were going on in California. And I don't know if I mentioned that I'm a political science major. So okay. I find, you know, ballots, propositions, and initiatives interesting anyway because I'm a nerd like that. But I would go and I would read some of these things that they were saying and the arguments that they're making. And so I started to feel a little unsettled at this point in my faith journey. And this is sort of what started it. And then I started feeling uncomfortable with other issues as this went along because, you know, it was sort of like the door had been opened just a little bit and now everything was kind of coming into question. And I definitely consider myself to be a feminist. I think I always have, but I never really let it bother me in the church before until Proposition 8 happened because I felt like Proposition 8 has so much to do with gender identity in general that it really started to get me thinking more about these feminist issues. And so through these two things, I started to feel very upset with the church. And I stopped going as much as I had been. And I honestly can say that I've never really gone back to being as active as I was at that point. But then I ended up getting an internship in Washington, D.C. just after that. So this from January 2009 to May 2009, I was an intern in Washington, D.C. And out there, I met a really close friend who's an atheist. And he and I were interns together, and we would have lunch together every day. And sort of through my conversations with him, you know, an hour every day, he really got me thinking about religion and spirituality and what I had always been taught, and beyond just the feminist and the gay issues. So then I guess I got even more curious. And sort of after that, I came back to Utah and I met another close friend who he was very Mormon, but through some experiences kind of had similar reactions to what I did. And he started reading a lot of the early church history and sort of introduced that me to that as well. And I read No Man Knows My History, and that was like a real hard thing for me. I'm sure you guys are familiar with that book.
You bet.
So for a while, I decided that I was kind of going to live like outside of the church. But then that didn't feel totally right to me either. So then I'm kind of now back in this limbo land, and that's where I am today.
How much would you say of your current interaction with other friends are LDS versus other faiths or currently?
It depends on if you mean true believing Mormons or just sort of anybody who takes the Mormon identity. Up until this past year, I still had a lot of very Orthodox true believing Mormon friends. And it's not that they're not my friends anymore. It's more that they just don't necessarily want to hang out with me. And I mean, I understand I'm different and I have different worldviews than they do. But now it's probably, I don't know, I would say 60-40, 60% being more of the atheist, agnostic, uncorrelated Mormon side of things. And then, you know, 40% being still that true believing Mormon.
So it's not so much that you didn't want to be friends with your TBMs. It's more that you were a bad influence, and so they've kind of shunned you a little bit, or?
Yeah, and I think it also is that I think to them, and I don't want this to sound disparaging in any way, but I think to them, it's that I just didn't try hard enough, and I didn't, you know, when I faced hard issues, I just didn't pray about it enough, which I guess I can understand why they say that, because in a way they're kind of taught to think that way, that, you know, if you just go pray about it, you'll get the right answer and it'll all be happy and hearts and flowers and unicorns.
Gotta love unicorns.
Yeah, but that's definitely not what my reality was. And so, yeah, now I'm kind of more on the outside, but I'm happy with where I'm at in my life. So that's that.
Any blowback from family? Have you shared much about with them about some of the journey that you're on?
I have and I haven't. They know that it's not what it used to be for me. But at the same time, I don't know that they know exactly where I'm at or what I'm thinking. My immediate family does know that I have a lot of issues with LGBT treatment in the church, because I do have a couple of very, very close friends who are gay, and that definitely affects the way that I view the church and what they say, and how much stock I put in what they say as well.
Cool. Well, I definitely have more questions for you, but why don't we listen to Cam, and maybe there'll be some similar themes, and we can kind of dive in a little bit more if we spot those. Otherwise, I'll come back with a few of my follow-ups. So, Cam, would you mind sharing 5 to 10 minutes of your journey?
Yeah, absolutely. I guess I was born in Idaho, so pretty close to Utah, in Pocatello, and I've grown up in actually just about every region I've grown up in, Pocatello, Boise, Moscow. And it was kind of interesting for me because until I came to Logan, I actually wasn't that used to being in areas where most of the people around me were LDS. When I was growing up, my best friend was Catholic, and my dad was attending the master's program at University of Idaho up in Moscow. And I had friends from all over the world because of that, because it brought in all sorts of different ethnicities and cultures. So I guess I've been exposed to religious diversity from an early age, but at the same time, it's not one of your own religion isn't one of those things you really question until I think I was probably about 15. Well, up to that point, it was one of those things where truth was largely dependent on what my parents told me was true. I had learned to trust them, as I think a lot of kids do. But even when I got to Logan, this was a around my sophomore year of high school, I guess, I was more attracted to hanging out with groups of people who didn't identify as much with the LDS Church, kind of people who would identify themselves as alternative or simply people who weren't LDS. Actually, the wedding I just went to in Montana was one of my best friends who was a non-denominational Christian. As for my family, my dad's side is pretty cutter, LDS, Reagan Republican. And my mom's side, a little bit more diverse. My grandparents are both very active. My grandpa's been a stake president on both sides. Both my grandfathers have. But they are, I believe they're still both registered Democrats, so I'm bringing politics in here. And all my mom's siblings, except her, have been inactive at some point. One of my aunts followed the Grateful Dead around in her younger days.
Wow.
My aunt, my favorite aunt, is living down in Salt Lake City. She's a stained glass artist, actually, and she's never really returned to the faith. And I think my parents have a pretty good idea of what I go through. I guess I'd say I'm fairly inactive. I go to a singles ward meeting maybe once, twice a month if it's an off month. But yeah, I don't know. Other than that, I don't really know what to say.
Cool. You kind of skipped pretty quickly from high school and beginning to associate mostly with these friends that were outside the faith. Was it just them sharing the perspective of you can be moral without the Mormon mythos? You can be, you know, there are different interpretations of Scripture. Was it just opening up a widened world to you?
Oh, sure. Actually, my parents always did a pretty good job of letting that people of other faiths were perfectly good people. They didn't really raise me to believe that they were inferior in any way. I suppose what got me questioning in a way was that I was being exposed to different belief systems, different ways of viewing the world and viewing one's relationship with God. It was getting into the in-depth questions that made me start wondering why I felt my faith was superior to the faith of my friends, and I discovered I didn't really have an answer to that. And ever since high school, I've kind of gone back and forth. There were times when I'd be pretty active and pretty fervent in my disposition to improve my life and get ready to go on a mission, and then I'd fall out of it. It's been kind of just like that. And then getting into college, I have always been fascinated in history and philosophy, so I took classes, and those on top of that added to the questions I already had of why do I feel my faith is superior? Do I feel my faith is superior? Is it possible that there's something else out there that would be a superior belief system for me, or would I possibly be better off with no belief system at all, at least in the realm of faith?
Or at least none at all, or just nothing super specific to where you would say that somehow the human mind has captured it in, you know, in language and in concept.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. That's kind of coming from another philosophy geek here. So I could sort of relate to what you're saying there. Go ahead, jump in, Natasha, please.
Well, just a few things. So if I'm understanding correctly, you did not go on a mission. Is that correct?
I did not, no.
Okay. And then if I'm also understanding correctly is, like, you know, you're saying you attend maybe once or twice a month at your singles ward. Is that mainly for social interactions and friends that you hang out with? Or is there some type of religious or spiritual reason that you still associate even that much with the church?
Honestly, I think it's probably more of the latter. I don't tend to have, even at this point, I don't tend to have very many friends that LDS or at least active LDS people. I guess it's all part of the continuing exploration, and actually I probably attend Catholic Mass and the Eucharist at the Episcopal Church in town just as often as I do the LDS Church service, just because of, one, my interest in different religious practices and this spiritual journey that I find myself on.
Okay.
Cool. Well, Natasha, as a therapist, not like we're not doing therapy on you guys, I promise. I mean, it's pretty. I mean, both of you have. I mean, especially Kayla, you talked about there being this trigger of you know, the GLBT, the Prop 8 stuff, not sitting right with you from your own experience, and this was your first real major cognitive dissonance when it came to the church story versus your own experience. But Natasha, just in general, this is the age of life where these explorations are normal, right? Would you share more about that? Yeah, and just kind of the framework of you guys are absolutely on a journey that I think most of the people in the world do, and in some ways I wonder if the church inhibits this through, you know, always wanting you to hang just with LDS kids, just with the Institute crowd, just this, because they sort of know that this sort of widened perspective that these two are getting might be on the horizon, and no one likes, they don't like to see our young people unsettled for this period of time, do they? I mean, maybe I'm putting words in your mouth. I don't know. Please.
That's
please riff.
Definitely my feeling.
Yeah, I think that... go ahead, Kayla.
No, you go ahead.
We're being so polite. well, just to your question, Dan, as far as, you know, appropriate developmental stages of life, I mean, obviously, you know, very soon into adolescence, we start questioning parental authority is probably the first, you know, developmentally correct thing to question, and we start entering that realm of, you know, is everything that my parents have taught me, you know, as perfect and as correct and as idolized as, you know, I saw it through the eyes of an 8 or 9 or 10 year old. And that is, you know, somewhat developmentally appropriate in the sense that if you don't go through some sort of that stage, it can actually be, like you said, hindering or hamper people from becoming kind of their own independent thinker. And so I try to ease parents' concerns when they come and bring me their teenagers that are being, you know, rebellious, and just tell them, you know, this is kind of what they're supposed to be doing at some level. I mean, obviously some kids take it to a different level than others, but I'm actually more concerned with the kids that don't rebel at all than I am with the kids who are questioning and, you know, wanting to break out there a little bit, because that's what they're supposed to do. I mean, they're supposed to be kind of exercising their wings so they can fly the nest at some point. So yes, the answer is yes, it's developmentally appropriate. And I think that that continues through, you know, not just adolescence, but obviously through young single adulthood, you know, in the early 20s, even the middle 20s. I think there's a lot of developmental changes that are going on in the 20s. And this, of course, broaches another topic that we can talk about later, but when we're getting married, when we're 19, 20, 21, which a lot of, I think, LDS females do, there's so much change coming up in the next 5 years for them, just from a developmental perspective, that sometimes that can be problematic to the marriages themselves.
Cool. Kayla, you had something you wanted to jump in with?
Yeah. I think in my experience, I've definitely felt some negative reaction to my wanting to kind of explore my spirituality and other religions, specifically from priesthood leaders. I had a ward in Logan that I was going to, and I was really inactive in that ward. I basically never went. And at one point, the bishop wanted me to come in and talk to him, and I thought, you know what, I'm going to go in and be honest, and this will be a good thing, and I'm going to tell him what's going on, and let him know where I'm at so that he understands. And I went in there and I basically told him, you know, I read a lot of the early church history and I'm trying to figure out where I want to go. And I've been exploring other religions. I've been going to some Buddhist services and some Episcopalian stuff. And I've been just trying to understand what faith and spirituality really mean to people and why I should choose this religion as opposed to another. And he was so unreceptive to that and basically said, well, that makes me think that you think the church isn't true. And I said, it's not that I don't think our church is not necessarily true. It's more that I wonder, why aren't other churches true as well? Why do we have to have, you know, the market on capital T true, which I don't really believe the LDS Church has capital T truth anyway. I believe there's truth in a lot of things, but not everything. And he just didn't seem to like that idea. And I almost felt like he was afraid of it, afraid of me exploring other religion and other spirituality, as thinking that I would choose something else instead of Mormonism. And I mean, I guess I don't really see the harm in if I had decided to do that. And I also have to wonder, why are you so afraid of it? Do you think that this church is so unable to stand on its own merit that I shouldn't be looking at other things? It just was very weird to me. And like you said, I feel like I'm at this age where I'm kind of in this, like, I guess I'd call it like the post-adolescent idealistic phase, right? Where you're just happy about the world and trying to understand what the people around you. And I just felt like it was a very natural part of becoming my own. And he just was very hostile to the idea.
I think Kayla brings up this excellent word, which is fear. And I think that is what drives a lot of it. And just what, as we're talking about developmental stages, there's also the developmental stage of becoming a parent. And when you become a parent, unfortunately, fear starts weighing in heavily. You know, fear for the safety of your children. And I do think that in many ways, the church acts as a parental role model to most of us. And that's where the fear comes from. And I had somebody in my therapy program one time explain it really well, because there was two of us Mormons in this class. And so he kind of, you know, looked at us, and this professor who wasn't Mormon told us, yeah, I remember working with, you know, a Mormon family one time, and they had brought in their teenager, and they were all upset that he wasn't doing, you know, these things that they thought he should be doing. And he looked at them and said, well, aren't you guys the ones who believe in this God who gave you free agency, and the whole plan of making people do what you were supposed to be doing was like Satan's plan? Isn't that kind of what you guys believe? And I thought that was really interesting, because the parental model doesn't really follow the fear model that we have in our culture, unfortunately.
Yeah, very interesting. Cam, did anything come up in any of this that you wanted to weigh in before I hit a follow-up?
Yeah, I actually had two things. First of all, I've always thought it was funny that a religion that is based on a young boy who questioned his own faith has become so closed off to their younger members questioning their faith. Seems kind of ironic. Yeah. And the other thing,
people
was,
don't think at the forest level. Yeah, that's But no, that's a great observation for sure.
Right, and I was also thinking about how interesting this system of bishops presiding over individual wards is, because the most recent bishop I've had that I've gone in and talked to was almost the exact opposite of Kayla's. He was very open, and he himself had read Bushman's Rough Stone Rolling. He was a little more open. It might have been because he was a more educated. I'm not sure. I'm not sure what Kayla's bishop's background was, but he was a medical practitioner, who's a physician. And when I told him about my concerns, he kind of had the same idea that this was kind of normal, and the best thing to do is stay away from the really negative stuff, and it's okay to question as long as you don't go too far overboard. So a lot of this was familiar to me.
How did that feel for him to respond to you in that way? Was that refreshing? Maybe I'm leading. I shouldn't say anything. How did it feel?
Yeah, I would say refreshing is a good word for it. Yeah. I honestly, when I went in to talk to him about these things, I was somewhat afraid that I would receive a more negative response, because I have kind of grown accustomed to how Utahns, or just, I don't know what a good term for it is, maybe iron rod Mormons can respond to things. And so, yeah, it was very refreshing that this bishop had a more open view of things, and he wasn't so concerned about what I was going through, what kind of things I was reading, what kind of questions I was asking. I think he had confidence in my abilities to go about things like a big boy.
Very treating cool. you like an adult, yeah. Well, just 2 points really fast I want to make. Is first is this kind of parental structure of clamping down on developmental stages that need to fly does not usually work very well. So that's unfortunate, because I do think we tend to lose a lot of our youth because of that type of a fear-based, you must obey approach. And then, I had a second thought and I can't think of it now, so I'll think of it later. Sorry.
Well, to me, the whole thing is the subconscious message. If you see somebody who's struggling, are you going to represent the church? Because in some ways, you in that ecclesiastical role represent the church to this person. And so are you going to represent it in a way that says, you will always be welcome here, truth in questions, all these things are welcome in this church? Or are you going to be defensive, and are you going to represent the church as judgmental and all these different things? And I just wish that more leaders would sort of realize that, whether it's explicit or implicit, they're playing that role of sort of representing the church and its attitude towards somebody who's in a stage of life.
Yeah, and that reminded me of my second point, which is I think that these young people of ours who are very bright and whom we've raised to be bright pick up on these hypocrisies, kind of like what Cam said about, isn't our whole foundation on questioning? And what do you mean I can't question? Isn't that what we're all about? And so they're not very lenient on us older folk about hypocrisies.
Very good. Very good. The two of you, would you say that you are conscious at all times that you're sort of in this stage of life where you're figuring things out for yourself? How close to feeling settled are you guys at this point? Is there any sense that you guys have made decisions that are 100% set in stone at this time about your relationship to the church now or in the future?
I don't know who wants to go first, but I would have to say, for me, absolutely not. I have no idea what I'm going to do with my life. And it's very back and forth. There are days when I think, I am going to make this work. I'm going to figure out how to stay in the church. And there are days, there was a significant period of 6 months where I was like, no, I'm not doing this. I can't stand it. I feel suffocated when I go to church. I feel like I'm degraded as a woman. I just don't want to have anything to do with it. And then there are days like today where I'm very much in between, like, I don't know, I guess it will depend on my life circumstances and sort of what happens, and then I'll see how I feel. But I think actually sort of where I feel like I'm most comfortable with today, which is sort of the opposite of knowing what you want and what's set in stone, is I think the one thing that is sure in my life is that I will never really be one or the other. I think that's the one thing that I've sort of concluded, is that I will never for sure be the true believing Mormon who just takes everything as it is, and I'll never be the person who says, no, I know it's not true without a doubt. I think I'm always going to be this sort of, I guess I would call it, an agnostic theist in the middle.
With a little hopefulness that there is a God and all that thrown in there. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, exactly. But I don't know that I'll ever be able to pick a side. I think that's the one thing that I've actually kind of concluded, if anything.
Cool. Cam, any thoughts on that sort of... Are you still in the middle of it? You're conscious of being in the middle of it? You don't feel like you've made hard and fast decisions that you won't retreat from?
Oh, absolutely. I'm actually glad we're on the subject, because I actually devote a lot of my time to this. Honestly, it might kind of be an unhealthy obsession of sorts. I spent hours just poring over different spiritual, theological texts. There's been periods where I've gone very in-depth into the early Christian fathers, like Ignatius, Augustine, Origen, people like that, and found Catholicism compelling, and there's been times where I've been very inspired by the Dalai Lama and his writings. I've loved the open stance of the Episcopal Church. But I guess I'm still, I liked what Kayla said. Was it agnostic theist?
Yeah, an agnostic theist.
All right, yeah. That's a good term for it because when it comes down to it, I guess I would, if I'm being honest with myself, I would still say I lean towards there being a higher power of some sort, although I don't try to define what that is, at least not at this point. I'm still somewhere swaying in the sea without an anchor, exploring the different options out there. I wouldn't say I'm comfortable with where I am, but at the same time, I'm glad I'm on this journey. I'd rather be questioning than following something without question.
Cool.
Yeah, and well, who said that life had to be comfortable, right? So, I mean, Dan, don't you, as a philosopher and me as a therapist, I mean, isn't this just neat to hear them both kind of describing this journey? I mean, doesn't it speak to kind of deeper totally. Spirituality versus just kind of adhering to a religion and how much more they have to look forward to if they continue down this path of allowing themselves to be confounded a little bit and wonder and question?
Absolutely. And I don't know if any of you have heard the interview I did with John. It probably took me a good 12 years of really being totally, you know, sort of living back into a comfort level. But I'll tell you, even during the worst times, I knew somehow deep into my heart that I was on a good journey. You know what I mean? I didn't know where it would end up and all that,
yeah.
But I just sort of felt like this is the human journey that I'm on. And of course, James Fowler's Stages of Faith and things, which I kind of encountered late in my journey, all of a sudden gave language to that experience that I'd been having all along of just sort of knowing, I don't know, I just wasn't hung up on guilt and you know, God judging me. I just sort of felt like it was, attaboy, you're on the road. So I hope that's
right.
Kind of the experience you guys are having. It
more so now than in the past. And in the past, I did feel a lot of guilt, and I did really beat myself up over it. And now I'm kind of just going with the flow.
Very
what's
cool.
Interesting to me, sorry.
No, please.
What's interesting to me is, even through all this, even though I'm not necessarily adhering to the LDS set of morals and beliefs, I still encounter kind of a personal set of morals and truths that are almost guided by my own thoughts and emotions. I think it was Abraham Lincoln who said, when I do good, I feel good. When I do bad, I feel bad. That is my religion. And that's kind of how I felt at this point in my life, because even without Mormonism so heavily in my life, I've still found that I have an internal ethical moral compass of sorts that directs me in certain ways. And like you said, it's telling me that this journey I'm on is a good one.
Very, very cool. Part of the reason I'm bringing you guys on is to sort of talk about the young single adult experience in the church in general, but I'm still fascinated in this area that we're at right now, so if you don't mind me at least asking one more question, and then you guys can, you know, if you know, you still want to keep talking about it, we'll absolutely do it. But I guess the question would be, as you're journeying here and as you're thinking and as Mormonism is still somewhat forming an object of attraction, or you're still in orbit around it to some degree, are there truths or were there great ideas in Mormonism that you could say, if this is what Mormonism would center on, if this was the key message that I would get on Sundays, man, I know I'd be going back. I guess I'm just trying to say, are there those ideas that still attract you within Mormonism that if they were pumped up in volume a little bit, might lead you to a little more peace?
Absolutely. For me, I love Jesus. Like, I love the Savior so much. And anytime that we're talking about Jesus and his life and his example, I'm happy. But I honestly think that sometimes when you go to LDS church, they talk about Jesus Christ, but they they kind of do their own thing, I guess. I want to be in a religion where we just talk about this man who put all others above himself, who was just so selfless, and who really, I mean, just from a philosophical standpoint, was such an interesting person, who really lived the golden rule that he taught. So I love that. And the other thing that I really love, I just love the idea of there being life after death. I don't really know what I think of the three kingdoms and the sort of division and distinction. But I love the idea of there being something coming next, and the idea that you can be with the people that you love again. And I think that's the one thing that I really hope is true, is that whatever relationships you form here, you can maintain them. And I hope that it's not just familial relationships, but also friendships and whatever it may be. But yeah, I definitely love Jesus. And whenever we're talking about his life, and I feel like I'm happy. But one thing I will say, I'm kind of reminded of this quote. I believe it was Gandhi who said this. This just keeps coming to the forefront of my mind as I'm saying this. He said, "I love your Christian. I love your Christ, but I don't like your Christians." I love your Christ, but I don't like your Christians. And so sometimes I feel like when we talk about, you know, about Jesus in church, that it becomes something else. And I don't want that. But I do love Jesus Christ. But I also love, you know, like Cam said, the Dalai Lama. And I find a lot of wisdom in Buddha and other spiritual leaders. So that there's definitely room to grow. But those are the two things in Mormonism that I really like.
Very cool. Just before, but Cam, I definitely want to go to you, but your quote there just reminded me of, I read the book, What's So Amazing About Grace, several years ago. I'm trying to remember who it's by. He's a real famous just spiritual writer, but I'll think of it. But I think early in the book, he opens up with the story of this woman who's, you know, she's a drug addict and, you know, basically down in her life, and somebody comes to her, and as she's talking to them, or as this person was talking to them, they said, "Well, have you ever thought about going back to church and finding help in church?" She goes, "Church? Why would I go to church? Why would I go somewhere where it'll make me feel worse about myself?"
Yeah.
And I'm just wondering, so you've talked about the things that you love, which is Christ, and you know, learning about this sort of person who was so outward focused, who embraced the outcasts, who, you know, showed God's love purely and through him, and all those different things that you talked about there. You talk about the idea of, you know, relationship and all that stuff continuing on. Are there things that turn you off that you do here in Mormonism? What are like the buttons that say, "Man, this is not the place for me"?
Gender issues, hands down. Anything that has to do with your sex or your gender, it's really, really hard for me.
So we're just way out of whack on that.
Yeah. The history of polygamy in the church, which is something that I was really exposed to when I read No Man Knows My History. Because, I mean, you know, growing up that there's polygamy in the history, but I never really understood its origins until I read that book. And not just that book. I read some other things, but that was sort of the catalyst for me. But also, you know, like I said, I really do have people in my life that are very important to me who are gay. And it's very hard for me to go to a church where it's constantly being brought up about how they're making bad decisions and that they don't have to act on this, that it's a choice. And it just feels like this dichotomous experience where what I know to be reality is so vastly different from what I'm being told from the pulpit. There was an article that somebody wrote on their blog. I can't remember who it was now, and I hope he's not listening because I'll feel bad that I don't attribute this to him. It was in the Blogger Knackle, that's what we call it, right? After Boyd K. Packer gave that talk in October conference last year about gay people, this guy, I believe he was from Texas or something, he wrote this blog post called Elder Packer and the Tilt of the Earth Axis. And it was, he kind of went through a story in it about when he was younger, some old man that he knew wouldn't believe him that what caused the changes in seasons was actually the tilt of the Earth's axis and not necessarily, you know, how far away you were from the sun, because, you know, that wouldn't make sense for there being winter in South America when it's summer in North America. But he kind of, so he gave this story, and then he sort of made an analogy with it and said, well, that's kind of how I feel when I listen to Boyd K. Packer say these things about gay people, like, because he doesn't understand what reality is, and it's really hard for me to even take it seriously when I've learned things that are so contrary to what he's saying, because my reality is, you know, that being LGBT is just a part of who you are. And for him to say these sorts of things, it makes me question everything else he's ever said. That's right. Kind of what the idea behind the article was. And that's definitely how I feel. I feel like it's really hard for me to believe anything else you tell me when something that I feel to be like just so fundamentally obvious is so very contradicted in what they're telling me. And I have to be honest, too, I have a really hard time with the family proclamation document for several reasons. Obviously, one of them is, you know, being a woman, I don't like the idea of creating these neat little gender boxes for husband and wife where the husband's supposed to be, you know, the provider and the presider, and the woman is supposed to be the nurturer and the person who spends their time with their children. I really want to see, you know, more of a sharing of those different roles. But I think one of my biggest problems with that document is the fact that I believe it leaves no place for individuals who are intersex. It really talks so distinctly about sex and biological sex and about how that's, you know, predetermined and how God will only make you what you're supposed to be. But I feel like people who are intersex, who, you know, are biologically both sexes, must feel like God doesn't love them. Like, I know if I were an intersex individual and I read that, I would be like, well, then what about me? Do I just not matter?
Right,
And so those are the things that are really hard for me. That was a very long answer, but that's kind of what I'm at.
Well, I appreciate it, and I definitely want to go to camp. Natasha, anything that comes up for you that you'd want to follow up on before we ask the same basic question of Cam?
No, I think the only thing that I'm just thinking overall, and I can say this even after Cam speaks, but it's just this whole idea that we many times do continue an adolescent relationship with leaders of the church. And I think that when Kayla said, you know, about, like, for instance, Boyd K. Packer and not being able to see the difference in something. And I think this is something that a lot of people get caught up in, is there's a lot of economic cost attached to that. You know, there's, when you've dedicated your entire life to a certain belief system or a certain tradition, and you're in, you know, it's very difficult to kind of change the inertia in that and to admit either you're wrong or to look at something a different way. And so I think that's something, you know, that's something that we all face as human beings, is this kind of emotional cost to changing our ideas and values, which I think is unfortunate. And we all face that at some level.
Sure.
Very cool. Cam, if you don't mind kind of diving into the same thing, I don't know if you remember with Kayla, I was basically asking if there were things in Mormonism that are super attractive for you, as well as things that have basically, man, when you hear those things, it just drives you the other direction.
Sure. I'm kind of in the same boat. I really like the message of love and charity and selflessness that is kind of the center of the philosophy of this person of Christ that we read about in the New Testament. And it's kind of funny, sometimes I've sat in sacraments and I'll say, no wonder people don't think we're Christian. Jesus hasn't been mentioned once this whole meeting. I've heard Brigham Young and Joseph Smith, but they haven't brought up Christ. So I'd like that. I'd like to see that change as well, make him more of an emphasis of things, because that's always been my favorite gospel as well. I love the stories about Christ.
Okay, and anything that drives you the other direction, or is it just what you just mentioned about just not being focused where you think we should?
Well, and I'm sorry, Kim, I'm going to butt in, but along with your Christ thing, which I totally agree with, even when we do mention Christ, and I think this kind of maybe even goes with what Kayla was saying, I don't hear the words mercy or grace hardly ever in discussions that are given in our, you know, over the pulpit. So that's, I think, where we miss like half the boat, if not even a bigger part of the boat.
Exactly.
Very sorry, cool. Cam, go ahead.
So yeah, any of the what drives you the other direction more than anything else? I mean, and especially if you feel like you're representing other young people in this thing too, what messages are coming across the pulpit that just don't fly with people of your age and kind of stage of life?
Well, one of the main things I've thought about quite a bit is I feel like we get a lot of the what we're supposed to do, what we're not supposed to do, but we don't get a lot of the why. We get the milk, but we don't get the meat, per se. And I wish we'd focus more on the why, the practicality behind certain things. And I'm also sympathetic to the LGBT community, as Kayla is. I honestly wish there was more of a place for them. And I can't really understand what it's like to be a woman in the church, but... it'd be nice
that's
to...
That's half the battle, though. The fact that you admit that, that's half the battle.
Very cool.
I do agree that it'd be nice for... If a woman could say, I would like to be a professor, I would like to be a doctor, I don't want to be a stay-at-home mom, and have members of her ward say, that is perfectly fine, that's okay. And it's interesting for me, I don't know if I mentioned this, but part of my childhood was... growing up in New York, and I think I was exposed to that a little bit. There are some differences that you will encounter from a more conservative ward in Utah, and that kind of branches into the next thing. The church itself is very much politically neutral. It emphasizes that it has several times, but there still seems to be a belief in certain wards I've been to that you really can't be a progressive individual. You can't be a Democrat. You can't be a socialist and be in good standing with the gospel. And what the church means when they say they're politically neutral is, I don't know, you can be a Republican or you can be a Libertarian.
Or a Tea Partier.
Oh, man, guys. That's funny. All right. Did you want to keep going, Cam?
Nothing's coming to mind, so go
ahead. All right.
Well, I think I'd like to hear was kind of what Dan said there to Cam's question is, you know, here we're getting kind of you guys' individual stances, but how much of what you're saying do you see in the larger single adult culture? Like, how many of your LDS friends or acquaintances are also struggling with these things, or are they just kind of going along with things as far as, like, I guess what we'd consider TBMs to do.
Yeah, and let me just quickly add in the extra framing. If you'll remember from the podcast that the other young single adult podcast, we're talking about the stat of about 80% of people at least going inactive during this period. So Natasha's question is very significant. If these are your issues that have sort of sent you into this uncorrelated Mormon journey or whatever, What's your sense of, are these the same issues that's driving those large numbers?
I definitely have a response, but I feel like I keep going first, so I'll let Cam answer first, and then I'll follow him.
Well, great. It's been the order, so if you'd like to go first, that's fine.
Go ahead.
All right. What I think the major problem is you get showing up at a sacrament meeting are more likely to be active TBM Mormons, where there's definitely other people who can relate to Kayla and Maya, but there isn't a central hub to find them. You kind of have to, by chance, or be introduced to them by other individuals, but they're definitely out there, and I'm friends with quite a few. And another interesting thing is, I found that sometimes if you have a good conversation with an individual, you'll find that on the surface, they might have seemed like a true-believing, true-blue Mormon, actually have some of the same concerns you do. I think sometimes it's just more well not to dig deep into those because there's a comfort in security.
Right, and that's for young adults and older adults too. I promise that's the exact same thing for sure. Did you have more? Did you want to keep going, or you want to turn it to Kayla for a minute?
Kayla's good to go.
Okay. I actually have a lot to say about this. I know that it is really high, the inactivity rates. And I think, just personally, I think that the church isn't really responding to it as well as they can. And, you know, I don't want to sit here and criticize and think that I know better than they do. That's not my intent at all. But I know that last fall, at the beginning of the 2010-2011 school year, they had a fireside for young adults in Logan. And I didn't go to it, but I had a couple of friends who did, and both of them came to me and said afterwards, they mentioned that, you know, they have over 5,000 young single adults on record in the university ward area, and 2/3 of them are inactive. And that their solution, they were saying, so you need to go out and you need to find these 2/3 of your brothers and sisters that are inactive, and you need to let them know that they have friends at church and that they can come back. But for me, it's not about me not having friends at church. For me, there are a few things that I think they're not really thinking through with my generation. One of them being is that we are the Google generation. Like, we grew up with this idea that if we want to know something, all we have to do is turn on our computer, type it in, and there's our answer. So
yeah, Jared Anderson made a lot. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay.
Right. I was just saying, Jared on the previous one talked about that a lot.
Yeah, I think that they need to recognize that, you know, there needs to be more transparency, because it doesn't matter if they're not going to give the information to us, because we know how to find it. We grew up that way, and that's something that I definitely did. Half the things I learned about Mormon history that were kind of disturbing to me, I found on fair and on farms, just because I went and typed something into Google, and then, you know, I'm already on this website, so I start exploring it, and I read something else, and I realize, well, I didn't know that either. Now I have, you know, 8 things that are bothersome to me.
And these are the apologetic websites that you're
exactly.
finding this out on, yeah.
Exactly. So that's one thing that I think they really need to consider, is that, you know, we didn't go inactive because we didn't have friends. That's almost a little insulting to think that's why we just jumped ship, because we didn't feel socially comfortable. It has a lot to do with the fact that we feel a little misled. And another thing, and this goes back to the fact that, you know, we've already been touching on LGBT issues a lot. We grew up thinking that these kind of relationships and these different types of sexuality are pretty normal. And I know that's not true of everybody of my generation, because I really do think that the true believing Mormons, the 1/3 of Mormons in Logan who are going to church, I think they probably do agree with the church's stance on that. But I think a lot of us, you know, I went to high school with openly gay people. I've been around gay people since I was, you know, really young. And for that reason, I'm really comfortable with them, and I've gotten to understand what their sexuality is. And I mean, if you think about TV today, a lot of the shows have LGBT couples in them. Like Grey's Anatomy has a lesbian couple, and on Glee there's a gay couple. And I think because of that, we really are comfortable with these issues. And even if they're not going to change their position on homosexuality and LGBT issues, I think they need to at least acknowledge that we overwhelmingly have sort of a different view than they do. And I think that, like, they're starting to recognize that, and I think that that's why after Boyd K. Packer gave the talk that he did at conference, that, you know, they kind of came out afterwards and tried to sort of tone it down.
And I think
that's because they're starting to recognize that it's an alienating thing for a lot of us. But I think that those are two of the biggest things that make our generation different than sort of something that they've really ever dealt with before. And so, number one, it's our access to media and information. And number two, just the fact that we grew up with a different moral standard and idea of human sexuality.
Right. Now, Natasha, I don't know if you want to jump in here, but I just want to play devil's advocate for a second here with both of you. All the more reason to keep you isolated, to have you associate only with, you know, in other words, if they do sense that this is absolutely fundamentally morally wrong, then the normalization of LGBT stuff that you guys are growing up with, you can see that why, you know, I don't know, it makes sense to me that they would just try all the harder to have you associate only with LDS kids.
Yeah, and I think that the issue with that is that it's living in a bubble that no longer exists. And I think to Kayla's point, and I think we're seeing this not only within religions but within countries, is that we're in the information age, and this is unprecedented, that we're this connected with this many people, you know, just with the click of a button, all over the world, different religions, different cultures, different ideas. And, I mean, unless we're going to go the Amish route, and even the Amish have dealt with this better than we have. I mean, they let them go for a while, you know, and let them figure things out and help them choose whether or not they, you know, whether or not this lifestyle really resonates with them. And I think, again, it goes back to that fear piece. We're so afraid that they're going to leave the fold that we do clamp down and we make very unrealistic expectations for our youth. And it kind of blows up in our face, and we're losing them in droves.
Yep. And I think that also makes us suspicious. When you try and clamp down on us, at least for me, my reaction is, what are you so afraid of? Why do you think that the church can't stand on its own? Why is it so vulnerable to me exploring, you know, other things in life?
Exactly.
Yeah, and I think that, again, it goes back to just kind of our normal reactions as humans when we're clamped down upon. That's not a good feeling. We want to be able to be trusted and be able to, you know, have discussions and have, you know, thoughts that are our own. And so it just kind of goes against our entire kind of drive within us to become independent and to become, you know, be able to stand on our own 2 feet, which is what we're all kind of striving to do.
Yeah.
Right. Cam, any thoughts before we move on to something?
Well, I think it doesn't look good on anyone's record, whether it's a religion or a government organization, when they kind of act secretive and aren't as open about things as they could be. I think, you know, the George W. Bush administration saw that happen with weapons of mass destruction and torture, and it's happening in the LDS religion. They tell you to stay away from these things, and in a way it makes you want to look at them more, you know? It's kind of like when we're kids, if around Christmas time when our mom said, don't look in the closet, what was the first thing we did?
Right. Yeah, that was one of my favorite moments of our earlier podcast, was when Teresa Edmonds says the first thing she does when she sits down with the young women's class is, you cannot shock me. You can't ask me. You can ask me anything. Absolutely. Let's just go for it. You know, I want to, you know, be real for you. And just the way that the people react to that. And I think that could translate really well to the larger church. I worry sometimes, though, that we don't have quite the people in place, the experts, the Natasha Parkers and others that have sort of, you know, we don't have enough of them that can kind of speak for the church or really advise the church to how to do it. I have a feeling they've been in the bubble a little bit too long themselves. I don't know if that's probably too harsh to say it, but I really wonder if, I think we have this robust theology, but I'm wondering if we have the messengers yet prepared who really can convey that. I don't know. Any thoughts on that?
I think that's definitely true. I know that same bishop interview I had mentioned earlier, where it was sort of disillusioning, what I thought, this will be good, I'll go and be honest, and it was terrible and blew up in my face. That was one thing that I kept thinking, is to myself, I was thinking, well, of course he doesn't understand where I'm coming from. He doesn't know half the stuff that I'm talking about even happened.
Right.
And he obviously can't, like, you know, understand why I'm having issues and why I want to go out and explore, because to him, I'm making up stuff from an anti-Mormon website or something, even though I've never even been on an anti-Mormon website.
Excellent. Good points. All right, we've been at this a bit over an hour, and I kind of want to bring it home
already?
Here.
What the heck?
I know, it's crazy.
We haven't even talked about sex yet. Well, I want to talk about homosexual sex, but I want to talk about heterosexual sex.
Okay, let's go there in one more step. Let's try one more thing in there.
Okay.
Okay, you guys have, in some ways, you've self-identified yourselves as uncorrelated Mormons or Mormons that aren't attending week in, week out, and stuff like that. I would love to know, just in general, though, because I know you did attend these wards. You certainly have friends who are still attending them. I want to know, are singles wards still pretty much 70% focused, 50% focused on Mary, 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 on, is it all? In some ways, maybe this can open us up into that discussion about, is the sexuality piece, you know, and the warnings against, getting too close to the line or even, you know, don't masturbate or whatever it is. Are these the messages that kind of dominate singles wards today, or is it pretty typical, just range of, well, this week we're going to talk about tithing, and the next week we're going to talk about service and all that stuff? I'd love to know kind of what the major messages are.
I'd say
it's the latter.
Well, I think that it depends on where you're going to church at. Because the singles wards I went to in Logan were definitely all about marriage, marriage, marriage. And okay, this is how I sort of categorize my Relief Society lessons at my wards in Logan. There were the three M's that we rotated through every Sunday, and that was marriage, modesty, and motherhood. And those are the three things that we talked about over and over and over. But, on the other hand, you know, when I was in Washington, D.C., I had a completely different experience. And I don't know if that's because I was in a ward with more intellectual people, where, you know, a lot of my wards were people going to Georgetown and George Washington University, and people who worked on Capitol Hill, and people who were lawyers in the area. So it was very much a critical thinking type population. Whereas in Logan, it drove me nuts. I felt like it was always about, like, you need to get married and you need to be chaste and you need to remember that if you're not chaste, it will affect your marriage later and you're going to have bad relationship experiences if you don't protect that for, you know, whoever's coming in later in life. And modesty, dress modestly, because if you don't, you're going to make it so these boys can't control themselves, and then it's just going to be a big mess. So, yeah, I think it depends on where you are.
Now, Cam, when I asked that question, you and Kayla both started in at exactly the same time, and I was hearing those first few seconds of your thing that almost sounded like you had a different experience than Kayla, that you felt like it was the normal rotation of topics or whatnot that a family ward would have, and you weren't hearing this marriage, modesty, motherhood, or you weren't hearing the sexuality piece from the pulpit quite as much. Is that sort of where you were headed with your response?
Yeah, I think there's a heavy emphasis on things like tithing and preparing for the temple, and they definitely do bring up marriage, but it's been a long time since I've actually heard conversations of sexuality, or I don't know if I've ever heard a conversation about masturbation in church. It's one of those things you don't really talk about, that you keep hidden away.
So you're not even getting that in the priesthood only sessions or anything like that, and vice versa, Kayla. You're not hearing sort of the tougher stuff when it's not a co-ed environment. And sorry, Natasha, please jump in when this is done. Sorry.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that's accurate for me. And I think it's definitely accurate to say that the sexuality stuff comes more when you do have that segregation of the sexes. Relief Society seems to be the time when they're more likely to talk about these things. And it's almost in a way of, you know, it's your job not to get him turned on, because if he gets turned on, it's your fault. And then you're going to have sex, and you will be the one who had to dress him modestly and to tempt him and to make it so he couldn't control himself.
Natasha, let out a wail of horror, please. Isn't that something?
I shouldn't be reacting, I guess. Or maybe I should. Maybe I should. Going back to Cam, what about in your interviews one-on-one with bishops or things like that? Are you asked, or even both of you, are you guys asked about sexuality more than just, you know, are you keeping a chaste life?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Like, are you asked about masturbation?
Okay, I'm going to take that.
I don't recall, honestly. They're very careful the way they go things. They'll word it and they'll say, are you physically moral or something like that? But I don't know, it's almost like you can't say the M word.
Interesting.
Again, I think we're having different experiences because I've been asked that. And I think the first time I was asked that by a bishop, I was 15 or 16, and I didn't even realize the girls could masturbate. And I remember being horrified.
I'm sighing again. I'm sorry.
That's the only thing you can do.
I don't even know where to begin.
You just laugh out of frustration. It's just like, what else are you going to do? Yeah. Crazy.
And actually, to be fair, I guess this bishop I spoke of earlier, who was a little more open in his ideas, he was a little more comfortable talking about those things. But I don't know. It just doesn't come to mind. So I guess it's not something that stuck, not something I remembered.
Okay. Natasha, do you have any follow-up? Because the next question will be, this will kind of get to the question that I know that it's on my mind, or at least a question I have. So go ahead first, though.
Well, I guess I just want to throw out there because I don't, you know, I guess there could be a lot of different interpretations to, I guess, my reactions at this point, since I'm just sighing and not saying anything. But I am a believer of what we would call the law of chastity. I do think that, you know, our sexuality is something very personal and important and sacred and something that we should protect and, you know, be careful about and enjoy and cherish. Okay, so I'm okay with all of that. What I'm not okay with is the very one-sided approach to teaching about sexuality, which again, I think many times in religious settings comes from a place of fear and comes from a place of assuming that nobody's done anything. And therefore, when most people, especially by the time that they're still single adults in their 20s, have done something, you know, they're just left into a position of feeling pretty crappy about themselves. And I take big issue with that, that the atonement isn't being more, you know, talked about. And how do we move to places where we can feel comfortable with what we're doing sexually? And I also take issue with 15-year-olds being asked about masturbation, for sure. And I take issue with, you know, asking specific questions about very personal matters. So, you know, yeah, there's a lot of back and forth there for me.
And putting the burden on the women for men's sexual arousal, which, you know, what do they say, 18 times an hour or something is pretty normal. It has nothing to do with what you guys wear, as you can tell from countries with, you know, the radical covering of women. It hasn't made a bit of difference there. So, it's the separation of desire and arousal from action and, you know, learning to not feel guilty about what's natural, and yet still letting the law of attraction be something that works to your advantage.
To that point, the desire and arousal, these are good, natural, developmentally correct things. Again, I'd be more concerned if people are not having those experiences than if they are. So, yeah, to couch those always in positions of negativity or sin or, responsibility that is completely inappropriate to take on oneself is, I think, very, very harmful.
Yeah. A neat thing, just it was either today or yesterday, Joanna Brooks, one of our regular panelists here, does the Ask Mormon Girl column. I don't know if any of you read her most recent one. It was a person talking about she's engaged and she's really turned on by her fiance. And she says, I'd had other boyfriends and whatnot, and it really wasn't a big deal, but man, this guy, you know, turns me on, kind of thing. And so I'm finding myself feeling guilty guilty about that. I'm finding myself being distant from him. I'm not able to talk to him about why, but I just don't trust myself. And, you know, Joanna's answer was basically, you have a great problem. You've made a good choice there. And she said something, I think she says, I'll even say it, you know, this was like, these feelings are divine, she says. And so then she just talked about the different things from that point. But just the fact that this was this wonderful Latter-day Saint woman who was starting to feel guilty that she was turned on was just something. Yeah.
Anyway. And I did a podcast on this as well with Jennifer Finlayson Fife about desire and feminist issues and, you know, kind of what Kayla's talking about where we put responsibility of arousal on women. And so that, you know, if anybody wants to look that up, I think that's a very interesting podcast to listen to as far as what Dr. Fife had to share about those topics.
Thank you for that. And that was a fantastic podcast. I mentioned it at the end of the last the earlier episode on young single adult stuff. That was just a wonderful podcast, and I highly recommend it. So thank you for doing that, Natasha. Okay, I guess my
question... Go ahead.
Okay, I'm sorry. Okay, so this led into my question. One of the things that you said, Natasha, was people are probably already having experience, and so when the message is no, 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 and it's hard line as if people hadn't done it, I guess here's my question for Kayla and Cam. Of this 80% that are falling inactive or something like that, what's your gut sense? How much of it is because of guilt over the fact that they've maybe done more things than the church would say is ideal? And then maybe what percentage of even those that are sitting there in the pews on Sundays are actively, you know, letting the bishop know, you know, does he have 30 people a week coming into him? Or I'm just trying to get a sense of how rampant you think sexual experimentation, you know, short of intercourse or even including intercourse is going on.
Oh, geez. There's that old stereotype, you know, everybody's doing it. And I actually think that in this case it's kind of true. There's a lot more people engaged in sexual practices within the LDS community, whether it's masturbation, it's actual intercourse, and I think there's this idea that you're supposed to pretend like it's not happening to keep social appearance, but from my experience, it's a lot more common than I once believed, and I think other people probably believe.
Kayla, what's your sense?
I would agree, and I like what Cam said. I think that there are a lot of people who are sort of making this distinction where I think they say, well, it's not intercourse, it's heavy petting, or it's not intercourse, it's oral sex, and I think that somehow they sort of get around that. But I agree. I think that most people our age have had some sort of sexual experience that would be questionable under church standards. And I think a lot of people our age don't feel the need to, like, tell their bishop about everything. I know I have friends who they're like, yeah, well, it got a lot of control, but it's, you know, I don't really feel like I need to talk to the bishop about it. And I think part of that is, I think sometimes, and I'm not saying that it's different for women that you know that it's more awkward to talk about that, but I do think there is sort of this weird thing going on where here you are as a woman and you have to go talk to some old guy about whatever your sexual experience was, and it's a little uncomfortable.
To be
talking about those sorts of things with, you know, with somebody of the opposite sex who's a lot older than you.
Absolutely. I loved this piece that we published in Sunstone years ago by a fellow by name Parker Blount. It was called The Scarlet Threads in the Lineage of Jesus, where he kind of traced you know, some biblical women, but then he talked about his own experience as a stake president, as a priesthood leader, and he found it very, very difficult to be in that position to where women were talking to him, and he certainly lamented that too. So I know it's hard on both sides, and it I know we've had other discussions here on Mormon Matters that we've addressed that it sure would be neat to have female leaders if there was going to be some counseling in those areas going on.
Absolutely.
Yep. Okay, so you guys say that it's going on. What messages, I mean, knowing that it's going on, what would you recommend? What would be the messages you would want to hear come across the pulpit? What would be the messages that you would hear in the counseling with the bishop that would actually, you know, be a positive leap forward? Not necessarily, it's not going to be encouraging more sex and all that stuff, but what would be the positive messages that you guys would love to hear?
Do you want to take that? Go ahead.
You want to go first, Kayla?
There you go.
I would like to see a message that, you know, did emphasize that, you know, it's not the right thing to be doing, but we're here to help you, not punish you. And that's basically what it comes down to for me. You know, not telling them it's okay, but being there to counsel them through it rather than make them feel like they've committed some horrible atrocity and they're going to be ostracized for it. And I don't think it's that extreme in most cases, but I have heard stories, and I think it just needs to become a more universal thing within the church that, like I said, the bishop should be there to help you, guide you through this hard process, not be there to make you feel guilty, because I think there's already enough of that going on.
Okay. Kayla?
Something that I think I would like to add is, I feel like a lot of times we sort of paint sexual experience as something evil, and it's really weird that it's this one sin where if you do it 1 minute, it's a horrible thing, and then, you know, if you get married, and then an hour later, you can do it. It's sort of the one sin that changes based on circumstance about whether or not it's okay. But I think for a lot of women, especially since we're often told in our relief society meetings, you know, you need to protect yourself, you need to dress modestly, and you need to be, you know, not doing anything that's going to turn him on, that it's really hard for a lot of women to sort of then flip the switch and to suddenly have sexual experience be okay. And I think we need to be talking about it in a way that it's not such a horrible, forbidden, dirty thing, that it's more something that it's so great and it's so special that you should be wanting to protect it for, you know, a very mature and intimate relationship, a marriage relationship, essentially. And I think we're going at it from the wrong direction. I think we're discouraging sexual activity among young adults by painting it as evil. And I think a better way to do that would be to discourage it among sexual adults because it's so great. And that because it's so great, it's something that you don't want to be just, you know, sharing with anyone.
Very cool. Reactions, Natasha?
Yeah, well, I totally agree with what both of them are saying. I don't think that fear and punishment is really the way to go, again, with especially, you know, adult sexuality when we're talking about, you know, people in their 20s. I think we do a lot of sexual education. Really, most of our sexual education as Mormons is directed to our teens and our single adults, and it's focused on the 5 to 10 years, maybe 15 years, where they're going to be single. And we're not focusing the sexual education on hopefully the 40 to 60 years they're going to share with their spouse, mm-hmm. you know, if that marriage makes it. So I think that's a huge disconnect, and I think that what Kayla's saying, you know, plays into that, where people just, they're so focused in on this 10-year education that then when the switch is supposed to go off to the now enjoying sex, now you're facing 50 years of problems, and these problems many times even ruin marriages, so it's sad.
Very interesting.
I think my other reaction, too, is I like to kind of separate what we would consider sexual activity. I mean, I think for instance, I think masturbation needs to be really considered as very separate from what we would consider sexual activity between, you know, two people, whether that's heavy petting or actual sex or oral sex, like Kayla said. But that masturbation is something that happens from a very early age. Most kids masturbate. They're now even finding fetuses touch themselves. You know, it feels good from a very early age. It also depends how you classify masturbation. And I think another problem that has happened in our cultural context is that this has been tied completely with pornography. use, and it has also only been completely tied to men. So women are getting no education or understanding that, you know, kind of like Kayla said, she didn't even know that, that girls could masturbate. And then men are really being very much shamed for this practice that really has been considered pretty healthy, normal developmental behavior by pretty much any medical community and pretty much our community at large. So, but it's all lumped into the same thing. And so it's all seen in the same level of seriousness. So I get young men all the time, or even older men, that when I go back to asking them questions about, you know, what happened when they were masturbating when they were 12 or 13 years old, you see over and over again that the developmental cycle of shame kicking in at a very early age, the lies to the bishops at a very early age, it just kind of all becomes a pretty quick disaster for these kids. And so there's got to be some normalizing, you know, around that. And the other thing that's very frustrating to me is that I see the language about masturbation changing. Like, I can't even find the word masturbation anywhere anymore.
In LDS stuff?
Yeah, not even in the Strength of Youth pamphlet. It's not there anymore. The word masturbation is not there. Now, arousing your passions is there. Who knows what that means?
Right.
They're not calling it self-abuse anymore, though, are they, at least?
Thank goodness, because to me that means you're cutting yourself. But anyway, so so to me, it feels like they're heading in a direction of making this more normative behavior, but nobody's talking about it or explaining it. And I guess they're just going to wait it out for the next 50 years until it just kind of naturally develops on its own, instead of somebody coming out and making a stance that, hey, maybe we haven't had it, you know, completely right on this. So that's frustrating to me, because I don't even know what to tell people when they ask me these questions, because there's nothing in the current literature that really addresses this. And statistically speaking, it's also very difficult to find statistics, current statistics on Mormon people. But I think back in the 90s, there was some research done, and, you know, it showed that there was a study done on LDS women, and 58% of them at that point said that they had had premarital sex. And I did a quick survey on my blog, which I know is not real research, but out of 135 respondents on my blog, you know, 40% of women said that they had had premarital sex, and actually 34% of men said that they had had premarital sex. So it was actually a larger number that came out from the women. And I think that when I talked to Dr. Finlayson Fife about this, she said that a lot of times women are the ones having sex more often, not always because they want to or choose to, but because, kind of like to the points that Kayla was making, they feel responsible for the man's happiness, or, you know, things like that. So yes, this is happening. We're having a lot of it. And I think what I see happening is that when we shame people and when we make them feel bad about themselves in a setting, what's the incentive to come back to that setting? I think it's as simple as that.
Right. Wonderful. Cam, when you were talking, I had a little bit of reaction to a couple of bits of language. So if you don't mind I don't know if I necessarily need to gauge you, but I'm at least going to jump off and clarify my position, and then maybe you'll come back. You mentioned the message should be, we're here to help you. And then a little bit later, you said something about this hard process or this hard road or something. And I kind of am getting at least a sense that maybe you and I have a bit of a different feeling towards what the repentance process is all about, and you know, the idea of a God that maybe you have to seek forgiveness from, and this sort of really, you know, crawling on your belly, lowering yourself sort of way, where I just have a God that sort of, just like we were talking earlier, this is the human journey to question and to break away, and it's healthy development and all that stuff. I'm not trying to say that everyone should rush out to have sex, but all this stuff to me doesn't feel like anything that God would never just simply, of course you're forgiven. That's the message, you know, there's grace. This was, you know, not necessarily the ideal that I had in mind for you, you know, as you negotiated these waters, but I certainly understand that that's going to happen. So there shouldn't be any of this whole arduous process of forgiveness. But on the other hand, if the help you meant by your bishop is, let's talk deeper reasons, like I think it was Kayla earlier, deeper reasons for staying chaste. Let's talk about, you know, that would be the education. The forgiveness is automatic, but it's this other stuff that you do. So I don't know, are we cross thoughts on the message of how hard it is to be forgiven for sexual sin?
Absolutely. I'm glad we clarified this. I'm right in your camp. I believe in this free grace kind of thing. And when I said it was a hard process, I didn't mean the achieving forgiveness part. I meant the overcoming that from a physical, you know, personal stance, like being able to stop doing that. Because like you, I don't believe we have to go through this process of crawling to earn God's forgiveness. So that's not what I meant when I said that. I was solely focused on the process of being able to stay chaste. And that's also a really good point. Getting back to this, why we do things. I think we do need to give people the practical reasons for staying away from these things rather than just saying, you know, don't do this because the scriptures say not to. We should let people know that it's actually responsible in multiple ways to abstain from premarital sex because of the consequences that can result or other reasons.
Very good. Either of Kayla or Natasha on that sort of little sidebar we just did?
Well, I would say that a big part of what makes it hard to go through a repentance process in our church is that many times it becomes a public repentance. These are very private things that people are kind of coming to the bishops to confess. And then depending on the discipline that's afforded, you know, many times people aren't able to take sacrament in the church, and that's noticeable. Many times, you know, callings can be taken away. Many times a temple marriage can't happen. Many times boys or girls can't go on a mission. So now these very, you know, sometimes they get kicked out of BYU. So now a very personal kind of private sacred matter becomes a public affair.
Yeah, great, absolutely.
Great point.
And I think what goes along with that, I'm sorry to keep butting in, but this is one area where I feel like we are very uncorrelated as a church. So, you know, I've asked many people these kinds of questions because I try to get a gauge where this stuff comes from, and different leaders, and they all have different kind of answers. So, you know, some young men tell me that they're expected to not masturbate for 6 months before going on a mission. And then other young men say, I'd never heard of that rule. So, you know, so then some men are being kept from serving a mission, men who want to go for that type of a reason, whereas other men are going and not being told that. So, and same thing goes for everything. And I understand that. I mean, I'm not sure I want it completely correlated. I mean, I understand that attitude and all those things kind of play into those types of decisions. But what also plays into those decisions is, you know, the culture and the attitude of the priesthood leaders in position at that time, and what type of ward you live in, and what type of geographical area you live in, and all those kinds of things. So I think it's unfortunate when people are held back from kind of some of the decisions that they want to make that would lead them further along in the church, and they're held back in ways that other young men or young women are not held back.
Yeah, the whole priesthood leader roulette is a difficult thing, and you've expressed it well. And we even had an example earlier in the podcast when the difference between Kayla's and Cam's, at least they're Logan bishops. So, okay, guys, what haven't you said that you really want to get across? What, you know, we have you on here, and you're representing every single young adult single
no
in the church. So what is it that you want to say that we have not at least touched on, or haven't at least set up a chance for us to follow up in the blog about? Either one of you.
I think one thing... Go ahead.
I just want to see more acceptance of diversity of opinion in the church, and I want people to try to keep an open mind. Like, yeah, if you're hearing this right now, try to step back and see things from another person's point of view. Of course, there's going to be extreme fringe opinions that you can throw out right away, but I don't know, just try to put yourself in another person's shoes.
Wonderful. Kayla?
I think one thing that I would want to say is, you know, trust us to make our own decisions. That it kind of goes back to something that we hit on earlier. You know, when you try and limit our experiences, naturally we're going to want to rebel, and, you know, there's going to be feelings of resentment. I know that when I had gone to that bishop with the idea that, you know, being honest with him would be such a great thing, if it had been such a great thing, I probably wouldn't have been so mad and decided to not go back to that ward ever again. And I mean, I don't want to say that it's because I'm offended that I have spiritual problems. It's not that at all, but it definitely didn't make me want to try.
Right.
And I think what I would want to say is that, you know, have faith in us and recognize that something else that we emphasize, that this is just a natural part of being a young person, is trying to figure out who you are and how you define yourself spiritually and emotionally, and letting us do that really isn't the end of the world, and it's not going to be the end of our faith, and we're completely capable of making good decisions.
Terrific, terrific. Natasha, I'll give you the closing.
Oh, goodness. Okay, well, I guess what I would say is, just going back to that idea of whose parenting plan are we going to follow, and if we're going to believe in this Mormon God gave us our agency and respected our agency, taught us, and, you know, kind of laid out maybe some of the consequences that we might face if we don't follow kind of his guiding rules for happiness. But let us make that choice for ourselves. And loves us and forgives us throughout every single choice that we make, and sees us through to the end of that. And I think that's, you know, we want to be like him and emulate him, then, you know, we need to go down that road with him and follow that example. So I think that's kind of where I would end. And of course, I do want to put in my little feminist thing that when I say God and him, I guess I'm really referring to both of our parents, who I think came up with that plan together. And I also want to say that, Kayla and Cam, it's been a privilege to kind of get to know you guys, and I'm proud to call you brother and sister in my religious community.
Thank you.
Thank
very,
you.
Very cool, and I echo that. Thank you so much, you two. That has been, it's been wonderful to get to know you. Kayla, give us one more shout-out about the group that you formed at Facebook.
Yes, it's called the Mormon Stories Young Single Adult Support Group. And if you just go ahead and search for that on Facebook, it will come up. It's a closed group, so you do have to request to be added, but usually I or Don DeLynn will get to it pretty fast, and we'll confirm you, and you can be part of that. And we will be posting more information about upcoming get-togethers where you can associate with other young single adults who feel sort of, you know, caught in the middle. And, yeah, that's about it.
Great. Well, I really admire you doing that. Thanks for stepping in and filling that void, and I know that you'll help a lot of people through that. Cam, you mentioned my friend Ryan Roos. I just wanted to shout out to him. I should have noted that he's a mutual friend of ours, so I just didn't want to end the podcast without saying, hey, Ryan.
Hey, Ryan.
Hey, just again, thank you very much for coming on. I hope that you two and Natasha, you'll check in with the blog. We'll get this posted here, and I'll let you know when it goes up. But please, we welcome all of the listeners to chime in at the blog. The last time we talked about young single adult issues, we had quite a conversation. I expect we'll have one again, and so I hope you guys will be active participants in it. And thank you, listeners, for your great support. We are growing and growing and growing in downloads, and we are excited to also be growing a little bit in our subscriptions, but we'd sure like to keep the percentage a little closer to those of you who are downloading, and then also voting a little bit with your wallets to help keep this going and keeping the level high and the commitment that we have going to it. So thank you for all that you're doing, and I look forward to everybody who can coming to the Mormon Stories Conference in June. You can find out more about that through Mormon Stories website. Hopefully we'll get to meet a lot of you. I heard Kayla, I think I saw you on Facebook saying you're going to go. I'm certainly going to be there. Natasha, are you coming out?
Unfortunately, I'm going to miss this one, but I will be there in future ones for sure.
Great. Well, anyway, thank you again, everyone, for sticking with us this long. We've again pushed our envelope well beyond where we like it, but again, I can't think of what I would have wanted to chop out of this one. It's been a great discussion, and it was fun to go theological and sort of worldview there in the first half, and then a little bit more to the single experience in the second half, and I think there'll be something there for everybody. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Dan, for having us.
Good night.
Good night.
Thank you for joining us today on Mormon Matters Podcast. To discuss this podcast with others, please check us out at mormonmatters.org. To keep this podcast alive, or to join our support community, please consider a tax-deductible donation today at mormonmatters.org. Music for this podcast was provided by Clayton and Sky Pixton. The Mormon Matters logo was generously provided by StudioCase.com. Thank you for listening.